Our state capitol report continues now with a look at the Conservation Congress spring hearings that are taking place tonight. One of the questions on the ballot, should Wisconsin have a hunting season for sandhill cranes? Should the state restore funding for state parks? What about maintaining support for the stewardship program? We will preview the annual Department of Natural Resources Conservation Congress spring hearings during this half of our State Capitol Report, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions about these issues. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Are you going to be attending a spring hearing tonight in your county? And is there a particular issue that's bringing you out to vote? Our guest is Patrick Durkin, freelance columnist for 17 Wisconsin newspapers, including USA Today's Wisconsin Network, the Wisconsin State Journal, and Wisconsin Outdoor News. His recent piece is titled, Wisconsin's Spring Hearings Still Have Value. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for being with us. So just quickly remind us, what happens at these annual spring hearings? What exactly is the Conservation Congress spring hearing?
Yeah. The Congress goes back to the 1940s, basically, with all the Leopold era, and trying to get more citizen involvement in a more organized, structured, setting where we have a system in place that we fall back on every year. And it's evolved over the years, and I think it's gotten better in recent years. And it's basically the Conservation Congress is, it's five representatives from every county in the state. So we have 360 people in the Congress. They're elected at these spring hearings. There's always at least two elections every year at each county's hearings. And then they get together about a month from now at a state conference and go through all the questions and all the answers and make their final recommendations, which go to the Natural Resources Board, the seven citizens that set policy for the DNR. So it is a nice, structured, sometimes, I always say, kind of a mind-numbing experience sometimes when you're sitting through some debates at these hearings, but that's I think a good demonstration of American democracy, and we have it here, and I think it's pretty well represented. We used to have times where it got kind of messed up in the process, but we worked through that one too.
Yeah, and this is advisory, and it is not just a meeting, though maybe traditionally that's been the case, but it is not just a meeting for people who are interested in hunting and fishing. It can be anyone, right?
Right, yeah, it's open to the public. So, typically most of the questions on there really get into the minutia of hunting and fishing, where that's where I say mind-numbing, because it's some stuff you look at and think, unless you're really into the different hunting dates and hunting hours and these kind of issues the hunters argue about, it's not going to be something some people find interesting. But there are always issues in that questionnaire that really run the gamut from environmental concerns to budget concerns to, like hunting seasons themselves. We always bring up the sandhill crane, but that's one that's been bouncing around for at least 20 years now. So it's like I say, a real structured system where you look at how these things come through. Any person can show up and make a recommendation for a question and to eventually go on the spring questionnaire. So it's a pretty open process.
Yeah, according to your piece, a little more than 4,300 people attended the hearings across the state last year, and that was the lowest turnout since 2010. It also marked the fifth time in the past decade that the total attendance was less than 5,000. Since 1970, the annual average is about 7,000. Why do you think the numbers appear to be going down?
In a big picture type of thing, I often wonder if it is the fact that American society is, we're not a group, we're not joiners anymore. We aren't, you look at bowling leagues, you look at anything that involves community involvement, we just don't do those kind of things in big numbers like we used to. So I think that's part of it. And part of it is always, which issues are driving people out there. We always say, if I have a hot issue on the agenda, we'll get lots of people to turn out, but this sandhill crane season, we've discussed it now how many times. I think that one's kind of losing its juice for bringing people out because it was on the ballot in 2015, is on the ballot in 2012, and really didn't drive big numbers to the polls. You know, whereas, you know, the one that really throws the average off is back about, I think it's about the year 2000, we got 36,000 people at these hearings because we talked about opening a mourning dove season.
Oh, that was the mourning dove one, yeah.
Yeah, and so that really kind of threw the long-term historical average off. If you throw that one out, the number drops down into the 6,000 range, I think it was. I figured it all out one time. So you look at in those terms, you think, well, 4,300 down from an average of 6,000 isn't quite as dramatic as down from 7,200. So there are those outliers too.
We have just a minute before news, and then we'll talk more after the newscast. But who's deciding that, hey, we should put this sandhill crane hunting season question on the ballot again?
I can't say for certain where that came from this time.
But in general, just generally.
Yeah, in general, what always drives that question is people. I think, Joy, people want to hunt. Some people want to hunt sandhill cranes, and they fall back on this justification of crop damage. And my point so often is that, you know, if all we're worried about is crop damage, well, why aren't we worried more about what deer are doing to the crops? Because deer are the ones that really drive down, that really cause the widespread crop damage problems. And then on the other hand, you have the people who oppose sandhill cranes saying we shouldn't hunt sandhill cranes because they're so beautiful. And my point is, everything we hunt out there in Wisconsin is beautiful.
Let me jump in, Pat, as we have news next, and then we'll talk more about the Conservation Congress hearings coming up tonight all over Wisconsin. In this half of our state capitol report, we are talking about the Conservation Congress hearings that are taking place tonight in every county across Wisconsin, talking about the process and the policy issues that are on the ballot. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions. Are you going to be attending one of these hearings? What is the issue that matters most to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Patrick Durkin. He's a freelanced columnist, and one of his recent pieces is Wisconsin's Spring Hearings Still Have Value. Patrick, I was going to ask you, though, that in that piece you wrote that state lawmakers don't seem to care much about how the Conservation Congress votes in these non-binding referendums or these advisory questions. Why do you say that lawmakers don't seem to care?
Yeah, you know, in a historical sense, when you look back at how the Conservation Congress came to be years ago, a big reason for it was because our legislature back in the 1940s really got tired of dealing with the kind of issues that come up in hunting and fishing all the time, where constantly fighting about things like deer numbers and winter starvation, these kind of issues. So they kind of created this Congress that advised what was then the Conservation Department on these kind of issues, and then basically bring the final proposals to the legislature for their okay. And what we've seen, though, in recent years, this has really gotten common in the last 20 years, and especially common in the last 10 years, is lawmakers basically taking these issues on themselves and basically deciding these issues without a whole lot of input from groups like the Congress. So the Congress feels, you can see their hackles are getting up more because they feel like they used to feel like they had turf, and this is their turf, and they'd bring their issues to the legislature, and then they have the due process in the legislative final review. And these days, you know, we're not getting that. We're getting quite a few lawmakers now taking these issues on in bills and creating law without a whole lot of the 2-3 year process sometimes you'd have with the Conservation Congress procedures.
Mm-hmm. So why do you say that the hearings still have value?
I guess I have this idealistic viewpoint that this is a process that evolved over time, and it's really something we shouldn't just discard now. And I guess I'm hopeful that at some point we'll have the kind of people in the Congress who will stand up more publicly and kind of demand some of this turf back from the legislature and make them understand that, you know, getting involved on their end is quite, so often it's happened where we end up with a real superficial process where it's not the good, meaty, biological-based, scientific-based, but then also the emotional stuff that comes out of the public debates. And I think that's just the best way to go long-term, and we'll see if I'm right. Mm-hmm. Right now it doesn't look that way, but we'll see.
One of the 88 questions that tonight's attendees will vote on addresses the attendance issue, and it will ask whether the DNR and the Conservation Congress should let people vote online rather than physically go to the meeting in their county, which is how it works now. Talk a little bit about this option. Is that what a lot of people are asking for?
Yeah, quite a few people have been asking for that option, and you know, it has its pluses and negatives. And on the plus side, as we mentioned earlier, this isn't a binding vote, so why not let people weigh in? On the other hand, you know, in a democracy like ours, you know, we're used to the idea that you know those who show up are the ones who decide our issues. And the other thing with the online issue that I guess I always keep in mind is that when you're talking about online polls, the science really shows, you know, that as far as sociological science, that when they have these opinion polls on various issues, you don't get quite the same responses you get from what shows up at a voting place. So I guess I have mixed feelings on it, but I think as long as it gives people another way to weigh in, and it gives the Congress something to look at as, well, is this a real valid indicator of what's going on out there in the public? If it gets more people involved in the process, I can't really say that's a bad thing. So I guess I'd weigh in and say, why not try it and see where it goes.
There's a lot of reaction on our Facebook page over the possibility of a Sand Hill Crane Hunt. I don't know if all these people will show up at the Conservation Congress hearings tonight, but Gary says, yes, there should be a crane hunt, first of all, because DNR wildlife projects are funded by hunting fees, and second, because no animal should be totally immune from being managed through hunting. This, of course, is only if the population is stable enough to sustain a hunt and they can be hunted without endangering public safety. On the other hand, Betty on Facebook says, hunting sandhill cranes is a horrible idea. Why, she says, our whooping cranes will surely suffer as well. So, Patrick, as someone who has, I'm sure, looked into this issue, what can you tell us about these arguments for and against the crane hunt?
Yeah, well, see, I guess I thought after we had the mourning dove debates, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that once we went through that process, and that was really emotional. You might remember all that mm-hmm. we did back then. Once we had it in place, we never heard anything more about it because the DNR does manage these seasons pretty well, and people go out and hunt, and the mourning doves are still at my feeders. They're still at most people's feeders, and so we see that, yeah, this was probably much to do about nothing. We got ourselves all worked up about this. And it gets right down to it, well, hunting does not remove that many individual members of that flock or that herd, so we can do this. And then I thought, well, maybe in a few years we'll have a sensible discussion on sandhill cranes, but now we end up right back in the same old, you know, emotional arguments about this. But I think hunting is emotional. This is not something that that we're immune to, and I just find it kind of frustrating at times that we have the same argument all the time, but I guess I agree with the first person you read where this is part of our system. We have a really good game management in our state, and we could do this in a way, I think, where you could actually, you know, create a fund, you could create a special license, a special permit for sandhill cranes. You could probably fund endangered resources in the state like we've never done before. So there's probably a constructive way to make this all work if we just sit down and talk about it and not get all emotional about it. But I don't know if that's possible because sandhill cranes, God, they're a wonderful species that people love looking at. The thing I will say, though, is that we hunt all sorts of things that look like each other. We hunt different duck species. We hunt, look at mourning doves. You know, there's not some big mass killing of other birds out there because mourning doves can be confused with other birds. So all those kind of issues, I think, they aren't really that valid. You know, we can do this. It's not that hard.
So there was a sandhill crane hunting bill that was introduced in the state legislature in 2011, but it didn't go anywhere. And as you mentioned before, the sandhill crane hunt issue was on the Conservation Congress ballot in previous years, including in 2015. It was, by the way, in 2015, supported by 59% of those people voting. Is there any reason to believe that the numbers would be significantly different this time around?
Not that I know of. I mean, I really haven't heard that many people discussing it this year. It's on the ballot, but I just don't see that changing a whole lot. Typically, people that show up and vote at the spring hearings, they're mainly hunters, and most of the hunters showing up will support a sandhill crane hunt. But where it goes from there, I just don't see the support in the legislature for this. I don't think it's something they want to take on because it's, again, it ends up creating a big mess on their phone lines and their emails, and I just don't see them doing it.
You know, there's another question asks attendees whether Wisconsin should restore state funding for state parks. Republicans cut funding in the budget we're in now and raised admission fees. Governor Walker is proposing raising fees some more. There's a talk from the DNR about selling naming rights to features in parks. What do you expect attendees to say when it comes to restoring state funding for state parks?
My prediction would be for this group that they'll support it. You know, I don't think most hunters like the idea of taking that money away from the state parks and making it a self-funding operation. I've never seen the kind of support that way. And plus, I think a lot of hunters now, like me, I can't help but notice when I drive into state parks with my sticker on, there's seldom anyone at the front gate anymore checking you, and I've pulled in a number of state parks now, parked and launched my boat, and no one's come down and checked me out and make sure I've paid my admission fees. And I wonder how much admission fees we're losing because of this. So I see that issue is going to get big at some point because I don't think our parks can operate the way they're doing right now.
Linda in Pewaukee is with us. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Yes, I attend every year. And it's primarily hunters and trappers that are there. There's a sprinkling of wildlife activists and, you know, people who do recreational, you know, non-hunting and trapping sports and things in Wisconsin. But the people that I know that aren't hunters and trappers, they've never heard of it. They don't even know there is such a thing. They don't know that you can vote on things. They don't know that you can write your own resolution and vote on delegates. And I'd like to ask the guest if he has any suggestions on how the DNR should or could make this known to the general public so that there is a better representation at the meeting.
Yeah, we have only a minute or so, Patrick.
Yeah, I wish there was some great solution there. I mean, I've been covering this issue in these hearings since about 1985, and we hear this. I've heard this commentary many years now, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I write about it every year, and it kind of humbles me sometimes to think how much time I've spent covering the Conservation Congress over the years, and still, lots of people never heard of it, and may never will hear of it. So. Mm-hmm. I wish I had an answer. I really don't.
We've been doing talk shows on it, too, on Wisconsin Public Radio for many, many, many years, too. So I guess they missed those. However, we have 30 seconds to go. Is there another question or issue that you're keeping a close eye on?
Not personally. I go into these every year with the idea of, well, let's see what happens this year. And the fun thing about it is that you get to these hearings, and something always comes up every year that I didn't expect. And I guess that's my expectation this year, too, that something will come out of this, you know, sometime this week that we didn't know about before.
And then we'll talk about it then. Patrick Durkin, a freelance columnist. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.